Well, hey, good morning and welcome to COTK Online. I'm Josh. I'm one of the pastors here, and I just want to say welcome. Hope you guys are having an awesome Sunday. This is kind of a special day for us, actually, at the for our physical services. We've got special guests Lee and Tanya Wilson in, and they're talking about life and marriage. And so if you are in the Lake Area and you're watching this at 9:30 on a Sunday morning, you still got time to get dressed and come on down because it's going to be awesome. So hope to see you there. But I've got a message for today. And I want to talk about the what ifs, going through the what ifs. I'm sure we've all kind of seen this, but we have a lot of what ifs in life, do we not? Like, there's just a lot, like, what about this? What about that? And I was thinking about this and kind of wondering, have you ever made, I know I have, but have you ever made decisions based on a what if? You know, there's some good what if decisions and there's some bad what if decisions. Good what if would be like, hey, there's a hurricane named Laura coming. What if it comes here? We should probably board up the house and leave. That's a good what if to kind of, you know, think through. A bad what if along the same lines would be like, hey, there's a hurricane named Laura coming. Eh, what if it isn't bad? We'll just ride it out. Eh, no big deal, right? So you got these good what if and bad what if. We kind of go through, look at the same circumstances, and we start to make some decisions. You know, if you have a friend who's got a snake they're giving away, and they're like, you know, hey, would you like my snake? You're like, no, I'm not adopting your 14-foot python because what happens if it decides to eat me? Or you could be the other side of things and be like, oh, I've always wanted this snake. And if he's as sweet as you say he is, of course I'll take him. He's like, he'll be my friend. And what if he loves me? And oh, look, he's already hugging me. So we have these bad, you know, anyway, if the snake's hugging you, you should be concerned. We have these bad what ifs and we have these good what ifs that we go through and we face these things on a regular day. When we were probably, I don't know, this has probably been about 10, 12 years ago, probably 12. Caleb was through, he's 15 now, and so he was through the baby stage, and Kelly been kind of putting some of his clothes, because, you know, when you have kids, man, baby clothes just seem to come out of the woodwork. Like, I tell young parents and people who are just expecting kids, man, hey, don't buy baby clothes, unless it's just something you, like, don't buy baby clothes, because you are going to be given so much stuff. And the thing is, you know, babies, they don't get stuff too messy, and so you're normally able to hand them down. So Kelly had a bunch of these clothes that we had saved from Caleb, and they're great stuff. It was, you know, when you're one of the early grandbabies, everyone loves to give them stuff. And so we had a lot of great stuff. And she's like, man, I want to save this for our next boy. I'm like, baby, we don't know if we're having a boy. Well, she really was insist upon saving him. I thought we should just give it away, but we decided, you know, she's like, I want him. So we packed him up and we put him in storage, saving for the what if. And a couple years later, we have, you know, Hannah and then Abigail. And so at this point, we're like, man, we just need to give these things away. So we go to the boxes and we begin to open them up. And everywhere that had, like, these were clean, completely washed, looked beautiful when we put them up. But anywhere there had been any sort of a little small stain or anything like that, it had exploded and everything was just completely ruined in this box. It was all washed. It was all clean. If we'd given it then, it would have been awesome for someone. But now, because we waited on the what if, what was going to be a gift for somebody now is just trash. And so we have these decisions throughout life. You know, we think about some of the what ifs we've got. What if I lose my job? What if the economy tanks? What if interest rates go crazy? You know, or maybe look at health and go, what if my child or my spouse becomes sick? What if my car breaks? Or maybe like the good stuff. I'm like, hey, what if I could lose this weight? That's a good thing. You know, what if I get a promotion? What if my Vikings win the Super Bowl? Now that would be a great what if. I'm just saying, I'm looking forward to that. But with these things, like, and I'm kind of having a lot of joke with it, but some of these are really big and some of them though are really insignificant. You know, it's kind of like worried about what if Starbucks is going to have their pumpkin spice latte back this year, you know? But what's crazy is all of the what ifs, they almost always, you ever notice this with the what ifs in your life? They demand an answer out of you. They want an answer out of you. All the what ifs, like, what if this, what if that, what if that? And they all want an answer and they don't always need an answer. The what ifs we face in life don't always need an answer. Sam, our youngest, he's 9 now. And if you come to our house, like, he is well known in our house for asking the most ridiculous kind of what if questions. Like, so, like, dad, what if tomorrow, like, an elephant drove a fire truck into our house and, like, set it on fire, but he didn't have any water on the fire truck? You're like, what do we even do with that? It's like, okay, that's a what if, sure, but he wants an answer. And so many of the what ifs in our life are like that. We're presented with all these different possibilities and different things, these different what ifs. And we're like, they all want answers. They want answers now. And sometimes they don't need an answer, but they want an answer. Man, what if this, what if that, what if that? You all know what I'm talking about? That's what I'm talking about. And so I want to look I want to look today at the book of Jeremiah. And we're going to kind of get a front row seat for the Israelite nation, as they face a what if kind of moment, get to watch their decision making. So a little history at this moment. We're going to be in Jeremiah 41. So if you want to grab your Bibles, we're going to go to Jeremiah 41, verse 16. But at this moment, Jerusalem has just been destroyed. By the way, side note, Jeremiah does a lot of, if you read through it from start to finish, it's a collection of his prophecies, but they're not in chronological order, by the way. And so you'll read through one spot and it'll be at different points in history. And the guy that actually translated for them, Baruch is probably his name, if I can say it right. But the guy who recorded them for him, he would just take them and put them in different spots. And so they're not always in chronological order. So just a little side note for you. But at this moment in history, Jerusalem's been wiped out. Okay, they have been completely destroyed. This is toward the end of Jeremiah's career and ministry to the Israelites. He prophesied through several different kings, trying for years to get these guys to get their act together. And through all these years, the Israelites have been worshiping other gods. They've been like, hey, like, I'm going to worship this dude. I'm going to worship that thing. I'm going to worship all these different gods they had. And the crazy thing about these gods was the sacrifices they would, in a sense, demand. And so Israelites had been, you know, they would do all sorts of crazy things. They had all these poles set up. They had the god of Molech, and they had Chemosh, all these different gods. Some of them involved child sacrifice. And so the Israelites had been burning children, like, to these false gods, something that God never asked for, and committing all sorts of terrible sins. There, you see the false imprisonment of Israelites. You see all these different things going on throughout this period. And over and over and over and over again, God is coming to them through Jeremiah and through others. He's going, hey, you got to stop. You got to stop. I've got to, like, I'm going to bring judgment if you don't stop. And finally, God says enough is enough. And he gets to the spot and he's like, I can't allow this to go on anymore. And I can't protect you from the penalty of your sin. And so God steps back and the Babylonians come in and beat them up. By the way, side note, just because things are going good for you does not mean that you are actually doing good. Just because things are going good doesn't mean you are doing good. The Israelites had enjoyed a place of fairly, you know, decent peace. They had a few things back and forth, but they weren't a bad thing. They had food. They had all this different stuff. And so they're like, hey, we're doing good. God's cool. He's cool with all this. God wasn't cool with all of it, but they were looking at the stuff that was like, hey, this is all going good for us, but they weren't doing good. And so don't, like, just a little side note, don't mistake God's patience and God's grace for God's approval. Like, we do that sometimes in our life. We'll live our life our own way and we ignore God's directions and God's instructions and God's warnings. And he sends them through his word. He sends them through people, through circumstances. We'll ignore those things sometimes and go, like, everything's going good. God's cool. Like, and God's not cool sometimes. He's like, hey, you need to fix this. And so that's what was going on for the Israelites. And so Jerusalem was destroyed. Just thousands of people are killed. There's already been some that have gone into exile, but thousands have been killed. And then there's just a few that have been allowed to remain. And there was a governor, a man named Gedaliah. There's a great name for you. Please don't name your kid Gedaliah. But he was ultimately left in charge by the Babylonians. And at some point in all of this, some of the Israelite guerrilla bands sneak back into Israel. These guys have been out and hiding in different places. And they come back in. And one of them, a guy named Ishmael, actually goes in and kills Gedaliah. And I don't know why, what his reason was for, but he goes in and kills Gedaliah. The rest of the guerrilla bands go, man, this is a problem. We're really going to have an issue. Go in, rescue the people that Ishmael took over. And Ishmael runs away. But now they're sitting there, and these guys are really worried. They're really, really worried, because the question now is, it's a what-if question. What if the king of Babylon hears about all this, and he comes to decides and to finish off the job? He kind of left alone when he left us here, and he decides to wipe us out because of what happened to his governor. And that's a real what-if question. And so they planned to run. And so here's where we're going to jump in. Look in Jeremiah, 41:16, and we're going to read a few verses here. So then I'm going to say Yonahan, son of Kareah, and the other military leaders took all the people they had rescued in Gibeon, the soldiers, the women, the children, the court officials, all these people who Ishmael had captured after he killed Gedaliah. And they took them to the village of Geruth Kikkim near Bethlehem, where they prepared to leave for Egypt. So they're like, hey, we're getting out of Dodge, man. This is not going to be good. Okay, they're looking at a wiped out town. They're looking at all this different stuff. And they're like, hey, you know what? We're getting out of here. And it says this, they were afraid of what the Babylonians would do when they heard that Ishmael had killed Gedaliah. They were worried about the what ifs. And what's going to happen? What if they hear about this and they decide to kill us all? And so the governor, that was the government that Gedaliah is the governor that had been appointed by the Babylonian king. Then in chapter 42, verse 1, all the military leaders, Johanan, all these dudes, they show up. All the people from least to greatest, they approach Jeremiah, the prophet, and they said to him, "Hey, pray to the Lord your God for us. As you can see, we're only a tiny remnant compared to what we were before. Pray that the Lord your God will show us what to do and where to go." By the way, listen to the words on this, by the way. Okay, look back at that phrase in chapter 3, verse 3. Pray that the Lord your God will show us what to do and where to go. These guys are talking, going, "Hey, you know what? That's the Lord your God, not the Lord my God, not the Lord our God. That's the Lord your God." And so they're, even in the way they're asking for direction, they're acknowledging that they have not done a really good job of serving the Lord. But listen to what Jeremiah says. Even in his reply, he's reminding them. He goes, "All right," Jeremiah replied, "I will pray to the Lord your God as you have asked, and I will tell you everything he says. I will hide nothing from you." They come back. Then they said, "Jeremiah, may the Lord your God be..." They're not getting it. He's like, "Hey, guys, it's not just my God. This is your God. This is one you guys have been supposed to been following to and listening, all this different stuff." He's like, "Hey, get it through your thick skull." They don't get it. So they said, Jeremiah, verse 5, "May the Lord your God be a faithful witness against us if we refuse to obey whatever he tells us to do. Whether we like it or not, we will obey the Lord our..." Oh, now they get it a little bit. Now just a little bit. "We will obey the Lord our God to whom we are sending you with our plea. For if we obey him, everything will turn out well for us." Man, sometimes we say some really smart things when we're in stupid moments. There's some stuff that comes out of our mouth. And God, by the way, will speak through some really unusual circumstances in your life. One of my favorite stories in the Bible is the story of Balaam and the donkey, his donkey that speaks to him and talk. I mean, I've been talked to by some people who I was pretty sure were donkeys. But like, here's an actual physical donkey talking to him and telling him, "Hey, what's up, dude?" Like, that's pretty crazy. God uses some wild circumstances. And sometimes there's some truth that we say or that other people say around us, even when they or us may be far from the Lord, and we don't even sometimes pick it up. They're going, "Hey, if we obey God, everything's going to turn out well for us." And I'm like, no duh. If you'd done this like 40 years ago, 30 years ago, 20 years ago, everything would, 5 years ago, everything would be doing a lot better for you guys right now. But they're a little thick in the skull. Verse 7. 10 days later, the Lord gave his reply to Jeremiah. Today, when I was just kind of prepping for this, that phrase, man, just kind of kicked me a little bit. 10 days. Like, this is Jeremiah, and this is a guy that God's been talking to at this point for probably, 20, 30 years. Like, God's been talking to Jeremiah, and Jeremiah's had, of anybody, probably one of the toughest jobs of most of the prophets. And just how he was treated and all this. And 10 days, Jeremiah goes to God with this request, and it's 10 days. Man, it's like we get frustrated sometimes if God doesn't give us an answer in 10 seconds. 10 minutes, we're like, "That's it, God. All right, Lord, well, I guess you weren't talking to me today." 10 days, like, let me challenge you, slow down a little bit. When you're facing these what ifs in moment, like, this is the prophet Jeremiah. If he's willing to wait for 10 days, and he's cool, man. He's like, "All right, cool, God. I'm just gonna chill. You tell me what you want to tell me when you want to tell me." Like, if this is the prophet Jeremiah and he gets to wait for 10 days, Daniel had to wait for 21 days in a big thing. You look to the book of Daniel, there's this huge war going on in the heavenlies to get Daniel a message from God. That's crazy. And so we get so frustrated sometimes when God doesn't, we're in this microwave generation. We want God to put it in the microwave and hit, and we got popcorn and we're like going, "All right, God, this is a cool movie. Let's go." God doesn't work that way very often. And so we got to be willing to sit down and wait for God to answer. So then God's answer. Well, Jeremiah calls them all together, all the military leaders, all the people. Verse 9, he says to them, "You sent me to the Lord, the God of Israel, with your request." And this is his reply. "Stay here in this land. If you do, I will build you up and not tear you down. I will plant you and not uproot you. For I'm sorry about the punishment that I have had to bring upon you. Do not fear the king of Babylon anymore, says the Lord. For I am with you and will save you and will rescue you from his power. I will be merciful to you by making him kind, and he will let you stay in this land." These guys are all stressed out, and Jeremiah comes back with this great word, and he's like, "Hey, man, chill out. God's got it. Stay here. Plant. You're going to be okay." But then he says this, "If you refuse to obey the Lord and say, we will not stay here. Instead, we will go to Egypt where we'll be free from," by the way, listen to these three things, "where we'll be free from war, the call to arms, and hunger. Then hear the Lord's message to you. the remnant of Judah. This is what the Lord of Heaven's armies, the God of Israel, says. If you are determined to go to Egypt and live there, the very war and famine you fear will catch up on you, and you will die there. That is the fate awaiting every one of you who insists upon going to Egypt. Yes, you will die from war, from famine, and from disease. Those are kind of significant. None of you will escape the disaster I'm bringing upon you. So these are some really, like, Jeremiah comes back and he lays out, hey, guys, guess what? I understand that you're worried about war. I understand that you're worried about famine. I understand you're worried about disease. Those are real, real concerns. Would you not agree? Like, I'm just sitting there from going, man, things I'm worried about? Yeah, that would be, you know, I mean, we may not face a physical war right now where we are here in America. But we have some wars sometimes in our work. Sometimes we have some troubles in our family. Sometimes we got some real battles that we are dealing with on our personal side of stuff. We have battles that are going on. And so, yeah, that's a real concern. Famine. Well, we're not like going through a famine, but man, sometimes it's a little hard to sit there and go, okay, how am I going to make ends meet this week? How are we going to feed these? How are we going to take care of these? Like, you look at the provision side of stuff. That's what the famine was. The famine was these guys' ability to be able to take care of their family. Because they were an agrarian society, they grew all their food. If you had a famine, you had a big issue. And so they're worried about provision and taking care of their families. And then you've got the disease. Man, health, that's a real concern. These three things, that if you're the things you were worried about, if you go there, listen up, you're going to die from war, you're going to die from famine, you're going to die from disease. These are the things that they were concerned about. And God's going, don't go, because if you go, the thing you're trying to avoid, you're going to hit it straight on. And so I ask myself, are those things legitimate concerns? And I'm like, absolutely. Like, when I look at things that we have to worry about in life, like, those are legitimate things. And here's the cool thing about this story. At no time in all of this does God actually ever condemn the Israelites for asking what if. He didn't condemn them for their worries. He didn't condemn them for their concerns. He didn't sit there and go, man, you guys are so stupid. Why are you worrying about that? He didn't at all. God never once just blows off their worries, and God doesn't do that with us. But we have the benefit of getting able to look at the whole story and know what happens in the end. They didn't have that in the moment. And God's sitting there going, hey, don't do it. I understand, but don't do this. And we get to read to the end, but they didn't. There's an amazing word that I love in Hebrew, and we see it translated a lot in the Bible. It's this word called akrit. And it basically means what comes after. It's the what comes after. And so, like, for instance, if I was walking towards you and I had something behind my back and I'm like, I've got a surprise for you, you would not know what that is until I pulled it out. And then you could decide at that point, man, I should have probably ran away because he's got, you know, a water gun or something like that. Or, you know, oh man, thank you. That was nice. Thank you for that gift. I love that. It's free coffee. Yes. I don't know, whatever it is. But that's the thing about the word akrit, what comes after. It, Proverbs translates it so many times as in the end. It would tell a story and then it would say, and in the end. So go through, you know, this. If you do this, you know, this guy does this. But then in the end, this is what happens. And so we're at this one moment where the Israelites have all these things that have happened. It's kind of like a choose your own adventure book. You guys remember those things? Do they have those things? I'm looking at Shammy's over here filming today. Do you have those things like in South Africa? You have the choose your own adventure books? Oh, not even the Wales Waldo is great. So the choose your own adventure books, this is maybe now I'm like a child of the 80s now. This is straight up 80s. But they were these awesome books. So hopefully, you know, if you're younger than 40, you have a clue what I'm talking about. But these awesome books, and you got to start off this story and it would, you know, go through this little thing. And then you get to a spot at the end of that, you know, second page or something. And it would say, okay, you know, you've got two options. Do you steal the car to get away from the guys who are chasing you? If so, turn to page 10. But the other side is, do you wait for them and hope that they're the good guys? If not, if they're going to do that, turn to page 47. You remember these things? These things are awesome. I love these things so much when I was a kid growing up. And I would always flip ahead and like read the, like, definitely not doing page 10. All right, page 47. No, I'm not the only one. Don't judge me. All right. The Israelites didn't have that benefit. They're sitting there in the home. They're in the middle of choose your own adventure. Okay, do we stay or do we go? And they couldn't flip to the end. All they had was what they had right in front of them, what they'd experienced. They had seen what the Babylonians had done. They had seen the destruction. Their city was in ruins. Their families were destroyed, all this different stuff. They had that, but then they also had God on the other side going, hey, listen, I've been prophesying. I've been talking all this time. Please, please listen. And so they've got a choice, and they're sitting and they're asking a legitimate what if. What if the king of Babylon comes? What if we have to face famine? I'm sure at this point there was not a lot of crops because the Babylonians would have wiped it out, you know, and there's probably because of that disease. And they're looking at some legitimate what ifs. And Jeremiah on the flip side is going, hey, man, it's all going to be cool. And they're like, cool. Do you see this, man? Are you seeing what I'm saying? So look at Jeremiah 43, 1 through 7. When Jeremiah finished giving the message from the Lord, their God, to all the people. I love that phrase, their God. And man, I'll tell you what, like, that's a really good question to ask. Is he someone else's God or is he your God? Azariah, the son of Hoshaiah, and Yonahan, and all the other proud men. Whoo, that's a great phrase. All the other proud men, better be humble, said to Jeremiah, you lie. The Lord our God hasn't forbidden us to go to Egypt. Baruch, the son of Neri, has convinced you to say this because he wants us to stay here and be killed by the Babylonians or being carried off into exile. All right. So all these guys, all the people refused to obey the Lord's command to stay in Judah. Well, they took them, all the people with them, returned from the nearby countries from which they'd fled. And in the crowd were men, women, children, the king's daughters, those from whom the captain of the guard, that's the Babylonian captain of the guard, Nebuz, whatever his name is, had left with Gedaliah, all these people. The prophet Jeremiah and Baruch, they were also included. In other words, they said, hey, you're coming with us. You may tell us to stay, but you're coming with us. All these guys, these people refused to obey the voice of the Lord, and they went to Egypt as far as the city of Tahpenes. So they leave. They ignore the voice of the Lord. And in the end, the Akarit, the Pharaoh Hophra, as is the Jewish translation of his name, he had been their ally, and he was their hope and their reason for going down there. When you read through the history books, what happens after this, and I don't remember his actual Egyptian name, you'll have to look it up, but he actually would, because of some of the battles he lost and different things like that, the people around him begin to think that he's kind of losing his mind. And so they decide that he was not a good king. And so they actually start to try to overthrow him. So Hophra actually goes and allies himself with Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, who comes and with an army and sends an army to try to help him regain his control over the nation. And these guys are soundly defeated. Hophra, in fact, Jeremiah would actually prophesy later on that Hophra would actually be handed over to his enemies and killed. And that would actually take place. And he loses his battle. And so all the things that these guys had feared, the war, all this stuff comes right to their doorstep, right where God said it would. God's like, hey, don't go. And so they made, when you look at it, they made a really bad what if kind of decision. And so I want to just give you three things as we kind of wrap up here. How do we avoid making the wrong what if decision? The first thing is this: we got to make a habit of listening to and obeying God. Those are two things, not just listening, because these guys heard, but we have to obey. Here's the thing. The Israelites had made a habit of doing the exact opposite, like, for years. And so when it really mattered, when it really got down to, like, man, like, guys, don't go, they chose to do what they've been practicing all along, which was ignore God. They've been doing it so long, ignoring God, doing their own thing. When it came to the moment when it really, now, this is do or die time. They did what they had practiced. So, man, what are you practicing? Are you making a habit of listening to God? Are you making a habit of getting into his word and going, okay, God, what are the things that are in my life right now that I need to fix, to do, to adjust? Man, this message, by the way, I'm not preaching just to you guys. I'm preaching to me because God, about 2 weeks ago, put his finger on some stuff in my life. And he's like, hey, man, you're living kind of from a what if kind of fear. You're making decisions based on some what ifs. And that was just going, okay, man, God, thank you. So what am I practicing? Am I making a habit of listening to and obeying God, or am I making a habit of doing my own thing and just going on? What do you got? That's number one, make a habit. The second thing, I've got to surround myself with wise counsel from godly people. Those are two things, wise counsel and godly people. And I've got to have them around me, I guess three. All right, you can get counsel, but man, and sometimes you can get wise counsel from people who are not godly. And there's sometimes, like, God speaks through a lot of different situations. I'm not saying don't have people around you that aren't godly, like that you like, but the people we need to have surrounded around us are godly people who have wise counsel. You need Jeremiahs who are going to tell you what you need to hear, when you need to hear it, not just what you want to hear. Like, what you need to hear, not what you want to hear. You need Jeremiahs. And the last thing is this: when you know that God has given you direction, you've got to do it. Man, learn to trust the voice of God in your life. And that can be scary. There's been a lot of times, I'm just being really honest, there's been a lot of times I've made some decisions where I've been like, hey, God, like, I don't know if I'm getting this one right, but this is what I believe you're telling me to do. So, Lord, I'm going to step out and I'm going to do this. And God, if I'm not getting this thing right, if I'm mishearing you, if I've missed something, Lord, I need you to tell me, I need you to direct me, to show me. give me your heart and wisdom, but this is what I believe you're speaking to me, so I'm going to step out. Like, it's amazing when I do that, how many times that normally I've gotten it right, because like I'm learning to listen. But then the times that I've gotten wrong, man, God comes in, he's like, hey, not bad, but let's go this way. But here's the thing. You can't steer a parked car. Like, you can't steer a parked car. And so sometimes God just needs you to get moving in a direction, going, okay, Lord, I'm going to trust that you're going to GPS me to the right spot. Okay, the God positioning system. All right, so Azarelva, here's the cool thing about this. At this same time in a different part of the kingdom, there were some other Israelites somewhere in this period of time that were standing before the Babylonian king, the one these guys feared, Nebuchadnezzar. And they were facing a pretty big what if too. And here's their what if. What if God doesn't come through? Just like the Israelites in Israel were sitting there going, man, like if the Babylonian king, man, we're in trouble. What if God doesn't come through? And they went this way. These guys are standing before the Babylonian king going, what if God doesn't come through? Here's the thing. The king had built a statue of himself. Most of you guys know this story. If you've watched VeggieTales, for Pete's sake, you probably know the story. Everyone was called to worship the statue. And they did. Everyone except for three guys. Shadrach, Meshach, Abednego. Okay? The king, Nebuchadnezzar, is teed the heck off. He is mad. He is furious. He is angry. And so he comes to them. He gives them one more chance to change their minds. And he said, and listen to what they said. Listen how different this response is. Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in Daniel 3 say this. Well, Nebuchadnezzar, we have no need to answer you in this matter. If this is be so, our God, whom we serve, is able to deliver us from the burning fire furnace, and he will deliver us out of your hand, O king. But if not, let it be known to you, O king, that we will not serve your gods or worship the golden image that you have set up. And here's the thing. If you're a human, you're going to have a lot of what ifs. These guys faced a really big what if. The Israelites faced a really big what if. You're not going to be able to avoid them. But let me tell you this, and let me ask you this really. Are your what ifs, are they bringing to a place where you are operating out of from a place of fear or operating from a place of faith? If your what ifs are bringing you to a place where you're operating out of a place of fear, you're going to be making the wrong decision most of the time. All the time, probably. But when I choose to operate out of faith, God honors that. He does. He does. He does. He does. He does. I had a verse out of Isaiah I was going to put in here, but it basically says, God speaking, he goes, hey, like, everyone who puts their hope in me will not be put to shame. It's in Isaiah 43. All who put their hope in me will not be put to shame. And when we sit there and we go, God, I'm facing a really big what if. What do I do? We take that moment to stop, to listen. Maybe it's 10 seconds, maybe it's 10 minutes, maybe it's 10 days, maybe it's 10 months. And to sit there and listen, okay, God, I'm going to get your direction on this. We get godly counsel around us, and when we feel like we've got God's direction, we step out. And when we do that, when we operate in our what ifs from a place of faith and not fear, God will keep us. He will direct us. He will lead us, because that is the good God we serve. Let me pray for you. God, I just thank you so much. Lord, that you are such a great and awesome God. And Lord, that you are not put off by, you're not freaked out, you're not angry with our what ifs, you're not angry with our questions. If anything, you actually invite them, because God, is in these what ifs that you have a chance and a place to shine in our lives. Lord, we just say, God, forgive us for the times that we have chosen fear, that we've chosen to look past your history, God, what you have done. And Lord, we've chosen to embrace fear and go the wrong way. God, if we're in those places where we have selected a place of fear, Lord, help us to choose to follow you, to obey, and to walk back into a place where we are facing our what ifs from faith. God, for everyone today that's watching this message, Lord, I pray that if they're in a spot where they're looking at a pretty big what if, that, Lord, you would give them peace, you'd guide them, you'd give them wisdom and direction on what they're to do. And Lord, just for every single person that's watching today, that, God, maybe they've never started with the very first thing, which is just getting to know you, to obeying you, to following you, to listening to you. Lord, I pray just that they would come to know you through your son, Jesus. Lord, that they would come to know, God, just what an awesome and wonderful God you are and how much you love us. And Lord, that you want to have that relationship with us where it's not just their God or somebody else's God, but where, Lord, you are truly our God. And Lord, we choose today to put our hope and our trust in you. And we thank you for that in Jesus' name. Amen. You guys have a great, great, awesome Sunday. And we will see you back next week. Have a great one. Bye.
Can we?